figure. He is the head of Smita at NYU, Yeshiva University, and he is the Varad Asra of the Basic Knesset of North Widmer. He's an international renowned speaker. His volume of Shurim online is tremendous. I can say from my own personal experience that barely a day goes by, genuinely, when I do not listen to a Shir online from Rabbi Leibowitz. His content is terrific, his breadth and depth of learning, and his presentation is fantastic, and his style betrays his humility and his ill authenticity. It's a great pleasure and privilege to welcome Harry.
Thank you very much. It's such an honor to be together with you, and I'm so grateful that so many of you came to learn together this evening. Certainly during Chodesh Elul, as we get closer to Rosh Hashanah, it makes a lot of sense that people are going to come together and try to learn and try to hopefully be somewhat inspired and at the very least learn Torah together to amass zechuyos in advance of the upcoming Yom Noraim. This is not my first time in this shul. I have spoken here before, so it's good to be back. It's wonderful to be back here again. What I want to do with you tonight is a little bit different. Normally, when giving a shir, it's either going to be a shir in what we would call lumdus, you know, where there's a halachic analysis and something more detailed and sophisticated, or inspiration, something more in the realm of Jewish thought, something in the realm of an understanding of the hashkafa behind, the outlook behind a particular time of year or a particular mitzvah. I would like to split tonight into two parts and then try to connect them together at the end. So I want to start with something that's really a matter of lumdus, or it sounds like it's a matter of lumdus. It sounds somewhat academic. It sounds like it's something that you would expect in a shir in yeshiva, which, forgive me, but that's what I do all day. I teach in yeshiva, so that's something that would make sense for someone like me. And then to branch off into the world of hashkafa, and then hopefully bring it all together, and hopefully we'll do that. I don't see. Oh, there's a clock. Okay, my watch broke on the plane, so I don't. So hopefully we'll do all of that in a reasonable amount of time. One of the most fundamental questions in Lamdas, when it comes to this time of year, when it comes to the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, the primary mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, normally a shul will have a different paroches when it comes time for Rosh Hashanah, and almost always, invariably, the white paroches will have a shofar on it. Because shofar is a symbol of this time of the year. And when we think of the mitzvah of shofar, the question, the primary question in Lamdas that the Rishonim, that the Achronim, that all of the commentators deal with is, what exactly is the mitzvah of shofar? I am going to do the mitzvah of, how would you say it in English? I'm going to do the mitzvah of what shofar? Or what the shofar? Blowing the shofar? Or what's the other option? Hearing the shofar, listening to the shofar. Right? So what is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah blowing the shofar? Or is the mitzvah to listen to the shofar? The way the Achronim put it, is it a mitzvah tkia or a mitzvah shmia? Is it really about the tkia of the shofar, the blowing of the shofar, or about the listening to the shofar? Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva that the mitzvah is undoubtedly shmia. It's undoubtedly to hear the shofar. The only thing is, it's impossible to hear a shofar unless somebody blows a shofar. So the only way to get it done, that you're able to hear a shofar, is if someone blows the shofar. But it's, you know what he compares it to? He says it's like building a sukkah. There's no mitzvah to build the sukkah, at least the simple understanding is that there's no mitzvah to build the sukkah, but you can't just wake up on sukkahs and say, hey, there's no sukkah in my backyard, what am I supposed to do now? No, obviously you need to build the sukkah in order that there be a sukkah, so that you could do the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah, of sitting in the sukkah, of living in the sukkah, of dwelling in a sukkah. So Moshe Feinstein says, that's what tkiyas shofar is. Tkiyas shofar is like building a sukkah. You blow a shofar just because you can't hear one unless you blow one. But the real mitzvah is to hear the shofar, not to blow the shofar. And there is one very, very good proof that he is correct about this. One very strong proof that he is correct about this, that the mitzvah is shmia. And that is, what would that proof be? The bracha, right before blowing shofar, baruch ata, right? We make a big deal about this bracha, and the bracha, it contains the words, lishmoa. to hear the shofar, not litkoa, not to blow the shofar, but to hear the shofar. One would imagine that when Chazal were coming up with a nusach ha-bracha, with a text of the bracha, they would have the most descriptive bracha they possibly can. So the bracha describes the mitzvah, and it describes lishmoa kol shofar. Parenthetically, Rav Druk from Eretz Yisrael, Zichrono Levracha, there's a Rav Druk now, his son, but Rav Druk Zichrono Levracha used to say that it's amazing that, I think it's universal, that in every shul, right before the shofar, the Baal Tokea says the bracha, and he does it like that, with a niggin, right? Is that done here also? Baruch. I once tried to blow shofar, I failed miserably. I was like bleeding out of my mouth after three tekiyos, and I had to give it up to somebody else. But I got through the bracha, and we made a big deal about that bracha. Rav Druk pointed out, the bracha on shofar is at most a rabbinic mitzvah. It's at most a rabbinic commandment. It's at most a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Birchas hamazon, when we recite birchas hamazon after we eat a meal, when we bench after a meal, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's for sure a mitzvah d'oraisa. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we treated our mitzvah d'oraisa with the same respect and reverence that we treat the bracha of Lishma Kol Shofar? Can you imagine after every meal, Baruch Atah? Rabbi Reisman, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva in America today, Rashi Vatar Vadas, said he tried it. He tried it for a year to see if he could bench every time with a bar. He said he did it once or twice and then forgot, and then by the time he remembered, it was too late. It's very hard to do, to be that focused on a mitzvah that you do that frequently. But anyway, the mitzvah, the bracha, describes the mitzvah. So it's a very, very strong proof that the mitzvah is lishmoa kol shofar. Even though the Magen Avraham said that the Smag had a nusach, a different version of the bracha, that said litkoa, but the Magen Avraham rejects that and says, no, we do lishmoa. We say lishmoa. Shagas Aryeh disagrees, and he says, no, the mitzvah is the tekiah. It's called tekiah shofar, tikuba shofar gadol. It's all about tekiah shofar. It's not lishmiah shofar. If it's all about tekiah shofar, well, how many of us actually blow a shofar? Usually one person in each minyan blows the shofar. So how does everybody else get the mitzvah if the mitzvah is really to blow the shofar? The only way one can get the mitzvah is through a mechanism known as shomea keona, that when you hear something, it's as if you said it. When you hear and have in mind that you want to get the mitzvah, you latch onto the mitzvah, and it's as if you've done it yourself. Very similar to how most of us are in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kiddush on Friday night. One person says the Kiddush at the table, everybody else listens, and they fulfill the mitzvah in that way. So again, we have these two possibilities. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who assumes very clearly that the bracha, that the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, and everybody is getting the mitzvah directly, not through some mechanism, not through some second-hand way. Everyone's doing it directly with their own ears. It's just that the only way to hear the shofar is to have someone blow it, and then you have the Shagas Aryeh who says, no, the mitzvah is to blow the shofar. How does everyone blow the shofar? Through a halachic fiction called a legal fiction called Shomea Ka'ona, that when I hear it, it's as if I'm the one saying it. So in yeshivas, whenever we say what's called a chakira, whenever we give a two-sided question like that, is it this or is it that, so it's understood in yeshivas that a question like that is only good if there's a nafkamina. So nafkamina would mean, what's the difference between the two sides? Meaning, practically, does it make any halachic difference whether the bracha is shomea or the bracha is tekiya? So any halachic differences, can you think of any? Well, we said the bracha already, but the bracha is what the bracha is. We're not going to change the bracha. Any other differences, whether it's shemiah or tekiah? Ah, so what if you have a person who's a cheresh, hamedaber ve'ino shemiah? If a person is deaf where he cannot hear and he cannot speak, he's pater from mitzvahs. So that wouldn't be enough kamina. But what if you have a person who's deaf, so he cannot hear, but he can speak? So he's a person who's intellectually sophisticated and therefore obligated in mitzvos, able to formulate thoughts into words and do all the regular things that regular people do, but he's unable to hear. So is such a person obligated in the mitzvah of shofar? So if the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, he can't do it. He can't do the mitzvah. And guess what? If he can't do the mitzvah, even though he's perfectly capable of blowing a shofar, but if he can't hear it, then he can't be motzi other people in the mitzvah either. Because the person who's doing the mitzvah has to be obligated in the mitzvah in order for other people to fulfill the mitzvah. So he if he's unable to hear, and the mitzvah is shmia, then he can't do it. But if the mitzvah is tkiya, then he should be the bal tokeya. He should be the one to blow. He's not going to hear it from anyone else, so it's not going to be Shomei Kona, but let him blow the shofar, and he'll be in perfect fulfillment of the mitzvah. How do we paskin? In Shulchan Aruch it says, Cherish ha-medaber ve'ino shomea. If you have a deaf person who cannot hear but he's able to speak, that he cannot be motzi other people because he has no obligation in the mitzvah. Pretty clear in Shulchan Aruch that the mitzvah is to hear the shofar. That's nafkamina number one. I'll give you a few more nafkaminas before we move off into machshava. Another nafkamina, another possible distinction, is whether we would apply the principle of mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucha. The principle of mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucha tells me that if I have the option of doing the mitzvah myself or sending someone else to do the mitzvah, I should do the mitzvah myself. Where does this come up? For those who are learning Daf Yomi, it comes up very soon in Maseches Kiddushin. In the very beginning of the second parak of Maseches Kiddushin, the Mishnah tells us, Heish Mekadesh Bo Ubishlucho. There are two ways a man can marry a woman. One way is by showing up to his own wedding and taking a ring, and the woman sticks out her finger and he says, Hareyat Mekadeshli B'tabar Zokadas Moshe V'Yisrael. That is the conventional way of getting married. However, there is another way. If let's say the man is busy that day. In America, I always give the example, his favorite team made the Super Bowl. That's a big sporting event in America. You guys wouldn't know anything about that. But there's he has something going on that day where he's unable to show up. So for some reason, knowing that he's not going to show up, the kala still comes. And he sends his friend to go do the kiddushin for him. He said, I'm making you my shaliach. I'm busy. I have to watch my favorite team play. But you're authorized on my behalf to do the kiddushin for me. And the friend could say, Hareyat Mekudeshes to my New York Giants fan friend, Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. And that would work. But if you have the option of doing the mitzvah yourself or doing it through somebody else, Mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucho. The Gemara says that some of the holy Amoraim, the holy scholars of the Gemara, were very, very careful to prepare for Shabbos by themselves. Even if they were wealthy, even if they could afford household help, they would be careful to do something to prepare for Shabbos, sweep the house for Shabbos by themselves, because that's a mitzvah to prepare for Shabbos. So I'm gonna give the mitzvah to somebody else to do. I can. But it's much better if I do it myself. Much better. It's mitzvah bo. Yosef Mibishlucho. There's a grandson of Rav Palm Zichrono Livracha, the great Rashi Vitar Vidas, who davens in my shul. And he said his grandfather made a kugel every Erev Shabbos. The Rebbetzin knew how to make kugel. He wasn't trying to insult her that my kugel is better than yours, and that's why I have to. But his grandfather made a kugel every Erev Shabbos. Why? Mitzvah bo, yoser mibishlucho. Better for me to do the mitzvah myself rather than have somebody else do a mitzvah. When I buy a new pair of tzitzis, I tie it myself. Mitzvah bo, yoser mibishlucho. Better to do it yourself than to, so long as I'm physically capable, I even try to put up the sukkah myself. Mitzvah bo, even though I have four able-bodied, two left thumbs sons, but they're technically able-bodied, but nevertheless, I put up the sukkah myself. Mitzvah bo, yoser mibishlucho. Better to do it yourself than to have somebody else do it for you. Now, is it better to blow the shofar or to hear the shofar? Or does it not make a difference? Meaning, if I have the, let's say I was capable of producing all the sounds from the shofar. I'm the rabbi of the shul, so I could say, move aside, I'm taking it. So should I be doing that? Well, if you hold that the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, well, I'm getting the mitzvah directly. You're not my shaliach when you blow the shofar for me. I'm doing the mitzvah. So I don't need to try to blow the shofar myself. There's no reason to try to blow it myself. But if you hold that the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, well then, better that I do it than ask someone else to do it for me. I can get the mitzvah either way, but there's a preferred way to do the mitzvah. I wouldn't send someone else to my own wedding to marry my wife for me. So why should I send someone else to blow the shofar for me? So that might be a second nafkamina. I'm questioning how many more nafkaminas to do. Do we want one or two more? Should we skip straight to one or two more? There is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid as to why one is yotze the mitzvah with a stolen shofar. The halacha is that you are yotze with a stolen shofar. If a person steals a lulav and uses that lulav, not yotze the mitzvah. If you steal a shofar and use that shofar, terrible thing to do. You should not be stealing shofars. But if a person steals a shofar and blows that shofar, he's yotze the mitzvah with the shofar. The question is, why? Why is it different than a lulav? The Rambam says, because the mitzvah is not the shofar. The mitzvah is the kol, is the sound that the shofar makes. And ein b'kol din gezel. You can't steal a sound. You can't steal something that's not physical, that you can't touch, that has no mamashos to it, that has no substance to it. And the sound is the mitzvah. So the mitzvah is not stolen, the mitzvah is only the sound. Whereas the Ravid says, no, there's a special pasuk that teaches me that shofar is an exception to the rule, and even though normally a stolen object cannot be used for a mitzvah, shofar is an exception, and you can use it for the mitzvah even though it's stolen. Now, according to the Rambam, the mitzvah is shemiya. It's the kol, it's not the shofar itself. And if the mitzvah is shemiya, the mitzvah is only to hear the shofar, so wonderful. So I heard the shofar, and that's why it's not a problem of mitzvah babavera when I use a stolen shofar. But the Ravid says, no, it has to be some other explanation. It must be that there's a gezeiras hakasav, that there's a pasuk, that this is an exception. Why does the Ravid have to reach for an exception? Because he holds that the mitzvah is tekiya. And if the mitzvah is tekiya, that's done on a physical shofar. So you have to have some other explanation as to why it is that one can be yotze the mitzvah. I'll give one more, and then we'll move on. There is a universal minhag, I think, that when the person who's blowing the shofar makes the bracha, when he recites the bracha, he covers the shofar with a cloth and at the time of reciting the bracha. Why does he do that? They even sell, like, I don't know if they sell them here, but they sell nice cloths that are bedecked in gems or whatever. Anything that a Jew can make a buck on, we figure out how to do it, right? So they have these beautiful cloths, and they cover the shofar with this cloth, and then as soon as the brach is over, then they reveal the shofar. It's like the big reveal, the unveiling of the shofar. So that's a universal minhag. Why do we do that? So the Ber Hetev quotes this minhag, but he's not very clear as to why. So, the Avnei Nezer, the great Sakachav Rebbe, has a beautiful explanation for the minhag. He said, well, you know, we also cover something else in Jewish ritual on a more frequent basis. What's that? The challah, right? Why do we cover the challah? So there are several reasons given, but the most popular reason, even though it's the least likely of the reasons, the most popular reason is Shelo yira hapas boshto, because it's embarrassing to the bread that you're saying a bracha on the wine when the bread is right there. So in order that the bread shouldn't be embarrassed, we cover the bread as we say a bracha on the wine. So the Avnei Nezer says, the same is true by shofar. The mitzvah is not blowing the shofar, the mitzvah is hearing the shofar. And if the mitzvah is hearing the shofar itself is not really the object of the mitzvah. The kol that it produces is the object of the mitzvah. So I'm going to say a bracha on the kol, on the sound, but the shofar is right there. So I don't want to embarrass the shofar that's sitting right there. So I cover the shofar, not to embarrass the shofar, as I say a bracha on the sound of the shofar. It would turn out that if you held like the Ravid, that the mitzvah is on the tekiya, or like the Shagas Aryeh, that the mitzvah is on the tekiya, that the mitzvah is the blowing and not the sound, then we need a different explanation for this minhag to cover the shofar. That's part one. If you've lost me until now, jump right back in now, because now we're going to move on to part two, and then we'll connect them. When it comes to the 10 days that are coming up, starting with Rosh Hashanah, really, really, hopefully, we're in full Yomim Noraim mode already. We're in high holiday season, and that's supposed to start in Rosh Chodesh Elul, right? It's hard to feel that way sometimes, because I don't know. Again, I'm an outsider over here, but at least where I come from, Rosh Chodesh Elul was like the middle of the summer. Kids are still in camp. Very often people are not going into their office during regular hours. Everyone's wearing more casual clothing, doing a lot of barbecuing. It's just a different feel. It doesn't feel like this intensity that you have, let's say, when you're in yeshiva and Rosh Chodesh Elul comes around. But you know when we really start feeling it? Rosh Hashanah. And for 10 days, we feel it. We feel a certain amount of intensity because we're about to face din. We're about to face a sense of judgment. And yet, Shulchan Aruch quotes from a Yerushalmi, from a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, that says as follows, Kanog Sheba Olam, normally, Adam Sheyodeh Sheyesh Bo Din, if a person knows that he's about to face judgment, lovish chorim, he wears black clothing. It used to be a sign of mourning to wear black clothing, not a sign of formality. You know, it was a sign of mourning. She'in yodeh heich dino yotze, because his future is so uncertain. He doesn't know, how is this going to turn out? Am I going to be found guilty and my whole life is over? Or am I going to be found innocent and I'll be vindicated and I'll be able to go as a free man? Avil Yisrael ain't okay. But the Jewish people, when we face din, when we face judgment, that's not the way we operate. Lo shim levanim, we wear white clothing, which was a sign of freedom. Umisatfim levanim, we wrap ourselves in a white talis. Many people who normally have black stripes on their talis for Yom Noraim get a talis with only white stripes on it. People who are in Yom Kippur sometimes wear white everything, a white tie, a white yarmulke, white everything. Umegalchim zakanam, we shave. Don't tell my wife, she wants me to shave my beard. No, megalchim zakanam, we shave. V'yoshvim v'ochlim usmechim. And we sit and we eat and we're happy and we're joyous. Because we know that Hashem is going to take good care of us. I just have one simple question on that. Where does that confidence come from? Are you so sure? I don't know, I think back a year ago, every year I try to think back what's happened over the past year. Who was here last year that's not here now? Who has gone, as a rabbi of a shul, you see a lot. You see struggles in making a living, you see struggles with raising children, you see struggles in marriages. Things that seemed so solid and so secure a year ago don't seem that way this year. Where does this confidence come from? How do we explain something like that on a Yom HaDin? We're facing judgment and that's how we're acting? As if we're all confident? If I was a judge and someone walked into my courtroom like he owned the place, I would not react positively to that. Who do you think you are? A little humility when you come in here. That's question number one. Question number two. We beg Hashem, Zechor Bris Avram v'Akedas Yitzchak. Please remember the covenant with Avram and the Akedas Yitzchak. Why does that help? You know, fundamentally, the way I was always taught, preschoolers come home with this project usually, where there's, on Rosh Hashanah time, where there's a scale. That's the symbol of Rosh Hashanah. And it's usually a little metal piece that where you can move the scale one way or the other. Right? So the scale is, on one side you have mitzvos, on the other side you have averos. It seems like a mathematical equation and a pretty simple one. That if you have more averos, it goes down in that way, that's bad news. More mitzvos, goes in that direction, that's good news. Oh, but my Zaydi was Avraham Avinu. Okay, maybe you should have learned some more lessons from him because you weren't acting with the chesed that Avraham Avinu acted with. How does that help? Third question. We're just going to pepper you with questions. Third question. At Ni'ilah, the highlight. You know, this is where it's the crescendo we've been working toward the entire Aseret Yemei, the entire 40 days of Elul in Aseret Yemei. It's really only 39 days, but all the Sfarim say 40 days. We'll go with 40. The entire 40 days of Elul and Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and finally you're at Ni'ilah and you're begging Hashem. And you know what we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that time? Al tavo b'mishpat imanu. Please, don't come with justice to us. Don't judge us, because then none of us will survive. How do we understand that? The entire season is about Mishpat. Hamelech HaMishpat. The entire season is about justice. How can we at the very end just say, and throw out the whole system? That's what we're asking for? Question four. One of the changes we make in Shmona Esrei during the Aseres HaMetshuva is the one I just referenced. We change Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat, that God, the King who loves righteousness and justice, to HaMelech HaMishpat, the King of Justice. The Rama writes that this is not Ma'akev. If a person said the wrong thing, he's still Yotze. But the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, says, no, you have to repeat Shmon Esrei if you mess this up. The question is that the Rama seems to have a pretty good point. Normally, when you find a disagreement between Sephardim and Ashkenazim, deep, deep down, us Ashkenazim know that the Sephardi position normally makes more sense. Right? Ashkenazim, I was at a wedding recently where it was a Sephardi boy married an Ashkenazi girl. And you could see there was, you know, some negotiations about how things were going to happen exactly. So there are two rabbis speak under the chuppah. The Sephardi rabbi spoke, and then the Ashkenazi rabbi spoke. So the Ashkenazi rabbi got up and he said, the Sephardi rabbi spoke for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. The Ashkenazi rabbi got up and he said, I'm going to be like the Rama, a lot shorter and way more machmir. That's the way it is sometimes. But over here, the Rama really has a point. What's the real difference between these phrases? I understand Hakel HaKadosh, HaMelech HaKadosh are entirely different. Hakel to HaMelech. But HaMelech HaMishpat versus Melech Ohev Tzedakah HaMishpat, just those extra two words? Like, why is that such a major difference? Why would that be Ma'akev the entire Shmon Esrei? Another question. The Mishnah Berurah writes in the very beginning of Hilchos Rosh Hashanah that the word Elul is a remez. Ta'ani l'dodi v'dodi li. I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me. It's interesting, when it comes to that phrase, people come up with all sorts of acronyms with the word Elul. It became like almost a minhag to come up with your own acronym of what Elul stands for. Someone said, Ani l'uman v'ishti l'shver. You know, it's very easy because the li is a prefix, the vav is a prefix, lamed and vav is a prefix, so you can do anything, you can make anything out of it. But we have Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. At first glance, that's a very strange thing to say on the Yemei Hadin. This is not the time that Hashem is our beloved. He's our judge. Ani l'dayan v'dayan li. That's what it should have been. I hope the judge is there for. Ani l'shofet v'shofet li. He's a judge and we're being judged. What does it have to do with my beloved? Another curious element of the Yom Narayim is we beg Hashem, Has kategor v'yikach sanegar mekomo. Hashem, take away the prosecuting attorney and let only the defense attorney have his opportunity to present. What kind of kangaroo court do we think God is running? That he could just take away the prosecuting attorney and let only the defense attorney? That's not a normal request. You know, a person comes into court and the judge says, do you have any needs? Is there anything? Yes, I need you to not hear anything bad about me. Only hear the good things about me. But sir, the accusation is that you murdered 7 people. Right, but hear that I did homework with my son last night. That's what I want you to hear. How? What kind of? And a final thing. There is a minhag to avoid what's called pas palter during the Aseres HaMetshuva. To avoid bread that was baked or other baked goods that were baked by non-Jewish people. Even, you're never allowed to have bread baked on an individual basis, but bread baked by a non-Jewish bakery. Even though it's a professional bakery, and the rest of the year we are lenient about this, Aseres HaMetshuva, we're very machmir about this. We take on this extra chumrah during Aseres HaMetshuva. That's the minhag. Now you have people that don't daven with a minyan between one Shabbos and the next. Right? But, oh, pas palter. I'm not going to eat my, you know, again, I don't know what's popular here. I'm not going to eat my Entenmann's. My Entenmann's donuts. That's going to be the thing. How about just like, I don't know, do a chesed or something. Maybe be kind to your spouse or your children. Instead, pas palter, that's going to be the thing. And people take that as the middle, because that's what appears on the books. Is that really what we have in mind? Is that really what we're supposed to do? That's supposed to be our one thing? Where does that come from? So there is a yesod that I heard from Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita that I think that he used to answer all of these questions. It's not his own yisod. It's not his own idea. It comes from a sefer called Keren LeDavid. It was written by the Rav of the city of Satmar pre-World War I. Not the Satmar Rebbe, pre-World War I. The Keren LeDavid writes that if you look throughout Tanakh, the shofar has a purpose, it has a use, there's something that the shofar is meant to accomplish. In Tanakh, the shofar is almost always used as a siren. It's a way of warning. You talk up a shofar bi'ir, va'am lo yecharadu. That you blow the shofar and then people know that there's a warning sign that the enemy is coming, so don't fear, just get ready. It's a call to battle. Like chatzotros are a call to battle. So the Keren LeDavid explains that the following idea that really helps us understand our entire approach to Yom Narayim, and hopefully this will resonate with you as it did with me. When the Jewish people were Yoshim al Admasam, when we were in Eretz Yisrael, there was a court system with a Sanhedrin that followed clear rules and guidelines. The Ran writes, though, that there were actually two systems of law. There's the system of law that's called Mishpat HaSanhedrin, which is the clear rules and guidelines that we know about. But then there was a second system of law called the Mishpat HaMelech, the king's justice. In the Drash HaSaran, he describes the dual systems that work simultaneously to each other. And let me explain what they are. We know what Mishpat Sanhedrin is. That's what the entire Masechet Sanhedrin is. That's what all the Masechetas are about. If a person does this Avera, he gets lashes. If a person does that Avera, he gets stoned. If a person steals this money, his ox scores his neighbor's cow. All of the rules. We know what the rules are. That's Mishpat Sanhedrin. But there's this whole other system of justice. It appears in Nach. A lot of people don't know Nach. It's not so popular to learn Nach nowadays. But there's three parts of Torah Shebichsav, and the second and third part are also important. Rabbi Reisman likes to say, nowadays, if you want to be known as an expert in Tanakh, you just have to know the names of the books. Most people don't know that, so if you know a little bit more than most people, then they think you're an expert. So if you know the names of the books of Tanakh, you're already an expert. If you learn Nach, you discover that David and Shlomo both sat in Mishpat, they both sat in judgment. That was part of their job as king, was to be arbiters of justice. But there are many examples where their judgment was clearly not halachic, where it was very, very obviously not a Mishpat HaSanhedrin. Most famously, two women come to Shlomo HaMelech, right? Remember the story with the baby? It's my baby, it's my baby. What does Shlomo HaMelech say? Cut the baby in half. Why didn't any of them say, yeah, show me where it says that? Open up a Shulchan Aruch, take a Shulchan Aruch off the shelf, show me, Shlomo, where does it say cut the baby in half? It doesn't. It doesn't say it anywhere in Chumash, it doesn't say it anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. It's not a halacha. There's no such din that you cut the baby in half. I remember when I first started in the Rabbanus, I got a call from a local rabbi who said, I'm out of town now, I'm on vacation. There's a woman in my shul whose mother is dying, and there's no rabbi there. I need you to be there for the family. So I said, sure, no problem. So I went, and the mother passed away, and we set up the Shiva house and the Levaya and everything, and we took care of everything. And I was talking to this woman who had just lost her mother, and it was very clear that she was not observant of halacha. She was not Shomer Shabbos. She was not... So I was wondering, I said, in America, it's very different than over here. Usually, if you're not Shomer Shabbos, you don't daven at an Orthodox shul. Over here, it's not that way, from what I understand, speaking to a lot of the rabbis. It's a very wonderful thing that people who are not Shomer Shabbos still affiliate as Orthodox, that affiliate with a movement of Torah mitzvahs. Okay, there's an aberration that they're not Shomer Shabbos, but they know what they are, that we are fundamentally believers in Torah mitzvahs. It's not that way in America. If someone's not Shomer Shabbos, they're going to a conservative shul, a reform shul, or no shul at all. Most often now, no shul at all. So I said to the woman, I'm just curious, how did you get to this rabbi, to this shul? She said, I'll tell you what happened. I was davening in our conservative shul on Yom Kippur. And the Chazan took out the Sefer Torah on Yom Kippur. And he dropped it. And the rabbi came over and picked up the Torah and said, "Don't worry, everybody. It's just the Torah. It's not like it was a person that was dropped. It's okay. Carry on. We're fine." And she said, "I was so horrified that he took that so cavalierly. Just like, oh, don't worry. It's just the Torah." She said, "I marched into his office. I pulled the Shulchan Aruch off his shelf. I opened it up and I said, over there it says you have to worry and you need to fast 40 days. Okay, I didn't want to tell her that whole story is Sheker V'Chazav. There's nothing true about that story. The Reform Rabbi didn't have a Shulchan Aruch in his office. There's no way. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch that a Sefer Torah drops that you need to fast for 40 days. But I let her have her moment of heroism. But that was her, you know, her story. Why did I say that right now? Yeah, show me in Shulchan Aruch where it says. If Shlomo HaMelech was going to say, cut the baby now, it doesn't say that anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. Because Shlomo HaMelech wasn't working with Mishpat Sanhedrin. He was working with Mishpat HaMelech. And Mishpat HaMelech means that if the king comes up with a way that to solve the problem, or something that seems just to him, he's authorized to implement his version of justice. When Avshalom rebelled against David, he built up support by going to those that David had judged against, and he told them, "You really should have won your case, because look, it says in Shulchan Aruch like this and like that, and you should have won your case." How did he do that? David got all those cases wrong? No, David was judging with Mishpat HaMelech, not with Mishpat Sanhedrin. Two neighbors come to David HaMelech with a shayla, a poor man who owned just one sheep, which slept in his house because he didn't even own a barn, and the other who had many, many flocks of sheep. The rich man had a guest, and instead of slaughtering one of his thousands of sheep, he stole the neighbor's sheep, slaughtered it, and served lamb chops for dinner that night. David HaMelech, what do you say? How do you paskin? Nasan HaNavi presents the case on behalf of these two fictional characters, but he says, what do you say? What's the halacha? And David HaMelech responds, Ben Mavesu, he deserves to die. He should be killed. The man that slaughtered his neighbor's only sheep to serve lamb chops to his guest when he's got thousands of his own sheep. Ben Mavesu. David, where does it say that in Shulchan Aruch? What does it actually say in Shulchan Aruch? If you steal from a poor man, you know what that's a lot like? Stealing from a rich man, or stealing from anybody. It's the same halacha. There's no difference if you steal from a poor man, and there's no difference how rich or poor you are. But David HaMelech said, Ben Mavesu. Later in Sefer Shmuel, an almana comes to David HaMelech, a widow, Nebuch. She said she had only two children, and one killed the other. So one is dead because he was the murder victim, and the other is about to be dead because he's the murderer. And he's chayv misa for killing. And she says, but what am I going to do? I'm going to be left childless because in a fit of rage, one son killed the other. And David Paskins, he should not be killed. Where does it say that in Shulchan Aruch? That's not the halacha. The halacha is that he should be killed. He's chayiv misa. So what emerges over here is that generally there are rules in Sanhedrin. If you steal, you pay back double. If you steal and slaughter and sell it, you pay back four or five times the value, because that's what it says in Chumash, and that's what it says in Rambam, and that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. That's what we paskin. And that's always going to be the Mishpat HaSanhedrin. However, intuitively we know that not every ganav is the same. Not every person who steals is the same. A starving mother may steal some bread to feed her children. Or a very wealthy fellow, spoiled child of a billionaire, may steal for fun, for sport, when he's hanging out with his friends. Those two are not the same. In Mishpat Sanhedrin, they're exactly the same. But in Mishpat HaMelech, they're not the same at all. A melech can take the entire circumstance into account. And that's why David can say that the rich neighbor is a ben mavis, and the murdering brother is not a ben mavis. And that's why Shlomo can say, split the baby. And that's why David can judge all of these cases in a way that Avshalom finds to be incorrect and improper. Because a melech can take the entire circumstance into account. The entire goal of Yomim Noraim is to have a mishpat hamelech and not a mishpat hasanhedrin. Yes, these are times of judgment, but there are two ways that God can do the judgment. He can take the scales straight from the preschool project that our children bring home and put the averos on one side, the mitzvos on the other side, and say, I don't care how much stress you were under. You had a responsibility. You didn't live up to it. Here's what you deserve. Or he could take the entire circumstance into account. He could take the relationship we have with him and with his children into account. Our relationship with Hashem doesn't make a single bit of difference on the Mishpat HaSanhedrin, but it makes all the difference in the Mishpat HaMelech. And that's why there's so much emphasis on Rosh Hashanah of Malchus. Shachar starts as if the Shliach Tzibur can't even wait to get up there from his seat, calling out HaMelech. It's all about Hashem being Melech on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that answers all of the questions. We dress up because we know that we have a Mishpat HaMelech. We're not going to a court case in front of a judge. We're going to a Melech who can take everything into account and who can take care of us because he's all powerful and there's nobody that's going to question him or overrule him. There is no higher court. And that's why Akedas Yitzchak matters. We say, Hashem, remember Avram. Remember Yitzchak. You know what we are. You know the stuff we're made of. You know that all of those sins are an aberration and that's not what we really represent. We haven't lived up to it yet, but we will, we can. There's a relationship you have with our parents. You're going to do this to the children of your beloved Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel and Leah? You're going to harm their children? There's a Mishpat HaMelech. The tefillah al tavo b'mishpat imanu is a tefillah, Hashem, please, no mishpat HaSanhedrin, only a mishpat HaMelech. And that's the difference between HaMelech HaMishpat and Melech Ohev Tzedakah u'mishpat. The regular Nusach says that Hashem loves both Tzedakah and Mishpat, meaning He approves of the system of Mishpat HaSanhedrin. But in Aseres Yimei Tshuva, as Rav Isaac Sher explains, we call Hashem Melech HaMishpat because it's Mishpat HaMelech. He is defined, not Ohev, he loves this system that's outside of himself called the Mishpat HaSanhedrin. He is the Melech HaMishpat. And therefore that Mishpat is an entirely different kind of Mishpat. The words Mishpat don't mean the same thing in the phrase Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat and in the phrase HaMelech HaMishpat. They mean different things. And that explains the remez of Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. In Mishpat HaMelech there's room for Ani L'Dodi. For I am to my beloved. We Dafka are not coming to Hashem as a judge, but we're hoping to come to Him as our beloved. And we ask Hashem, silence the kategor, silence the prosecuting attorney. Because we're coming with Melech, with Mishpat HaMelech. Right, but that's within Mishpat HaSanhedrin, meaning the Mishpat that Rav Isaac Sher explains, the Mishpat that he loves is something outside of himself. So Rav Isaac Sher explains that no, that when you describe something outside of Hashem, that's a system that's outside of Him. When you're describing Him, that's His own system. Meaning Ohev is the key word over there, that He loves something else. And that's the Mishpat HaSanhedrin. But when you're describing HaMelech HaMishpat, you're describing Him, you're describing what He is. And He is the Melech HaMishpat. And the idea of paspalte is that we're doing something extra, just out of love. In Mishpat HaSanhedrin, it wouldn't have any value. But in Mishpat HaMelech, it has extraordinary value to do something out of love. When you do something that you're supposed to do, that you're obligated to do, that you always have to do, maybe you're not always good about doing it, you're not going to have any... You're not gonna gain any favor in the eyes of the person that you're doing it for. You have to do it. No wife ever thanked her husband for the wedding band. You want to be married, you have to give a wedding. That's just the way it works. Have you ever been under a chuppah or seen under a chuppah where the husband says, the man says, Hareyam Kadesh Bitabazo Kadas Moshe Yisrael, and she says, thank you. Never seen it. Kind of, who raised her? How did she not say thank you? Someone just gave her a gift. But why is she able to do that? Because you have to do that. You can't not give a ring. You want to be married at the end of this. That's what you have to do. That doesn't get a special thank you. But when he gets her something extra, you know, he comes with a rose to the Badekin. Oh, thank you. He didn't pay for that rose. Your parents paid for that rose. He didn't do anything. But it's a little something that he didn't have to do. And if he didn't have to do it, that expresses love. This could shed light on the mitzvah of Shmias Shofar. The shofar is a pachad. The shofar is frightening. But our entire goal of Yom Noraim is to achieve Mishpat HaMelech and not to have to face Mishpat HaSanhedrin. The person blowing the shofar, think about his role. Who's the guy that blows the shofar to warn everybody about war? He's on the lookout. Oh no! The enemy is coming! He sounds the alarm. He's terrified at that moment. The people who hear it because they're getting the advance warning have a chance to escape. They have a chance. They don't see the enemy coming. They're at a safe distance. They have a chance to decide, are we going to fight, are we going to escape, are we going to go in a different direction? Somebody who hears the shofar is alerted that there's a war happening, and he could decide, do I want to fight, do I want to flee, do I want to join the other side, do I want to make an overture of peace? He's got options. The mitzvah of shofar isn't tkiyah. That would be the case if we had a battle on our hands that ran through a mishpat HaSanhedrin. But our mitzvah is shmiyah. Because being alerted that there's something big happening and that you therefore have an opportunity to react accordingly. Not by confronting Mishpat Sanhedrin, but by trying to achieve Mishpat HaMelech. Our avoda is to work on our relationship with Hashem even more than the technical aspects of tshuva. To build a relationship with Hashem, to talk about Hashem. One of my rebbeim, before he walks into his classroom each and every day, says a short prayer. He davens to Hashem that he should be able to relate to his Talmidim, that he should be able to share Torah with his Talmidim in a way that they'll accept it. And Ni'ilah, we ask Hashem, Psach Shari Shemayim Be'es Ni'ilah Shar, open the gates when the gates are supposed to be closed. You can't ask that in a Mishpat Sanhedrin. If the gates are supposed to be closed, it's closed. In a Mishpat HaMelech, you can ask that. Rabbi Reisman tells a story. Before the Iron Curtain came down, there was a fellow that he knew who used to broadcast shiurim in Russia behind the Iron Curtain. And what he would do is he would make a tape and send the recording to Washington. And somehow, from there, it got to where it needed to go and it was broadcast to Jews in Russia. And he had to send in a tape one day and he asked Rabbi Reisman, can you take me to a particular post office in Manhattan? It closes, you know, at 9 o'clock. But I need to get this in there before the post office closes. And Rabbi Reisman was in Brooklyn at the time. He looked at his watch. He said, it's 8:45. Manhattan from Brooklyn, you're not getting there by 9 o'clock. And it's too late. And the fellow said, you never know. It might be open. And he said, I don't know if you know what a post office is, but these are government workers. It will not be open at 9:01. It likely won't be open at 8:59. And the guy said, nah, you never know. So what did he do? He drove him to the building, and the guy said, swing around to the back of the building. The back of the building? It's a huge post office. So he drives to the back of the building. The fellow gets out with his envelope, with his tapes in the envelope. He goes to a door that only opens from the inside. He bangs loudly three times. Someone comes right away, opens the door, he hands him the envelope, and he goes away. And he comes back into the car. Rabbi says, what was that? He said, you think this is the first time I was ever late? And I know the guy on the other side of the door. I always have a relationship there. I'm not just walking in as a customer. Of course it would have been closed if you're walking in as a customer. When you're coming with Mishpat to Sanhedrin, you're going to tell Hashem, no, keep the gates open. I know the gates are supposed to be closed. Keep them open. No. Post office closes. But if you know the guy on the other side, you know who's on the other side of that gate, and you have a relationship with somebody on the other side of that gate, well, then the gates can open up even if they're supposed to close. So our avodah, more than anything else, and it's good to have specific things that we focus on and specific things to take upon ourselves, that's good, that's true, that's right, that's the correct way to go about things. But fundamentally, our job during this time of year is to build a relationship, to make sure that Hashem is part of our lives, to learn how to occupy our mind with thoughts of Hashem, with gratitude to Hashem, to learn how to make Hashem more of a reality in our lives. Maybe slow down a little bit when we're saying a bracha. Maybe just to make sure, take one bracha. Every time I say the bracha of, it doesn't even have to be a common one, like Shakol Niyah B'Dvaro. Every time I say Bari Priya Gafen in the next, couple of weeks, I'm going to slow down by Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Hashem is going to be a little bit more of a part of my life. And I'll recognize Him as such. And through that we'll have a relationship. We're going to know who's on the other side of the door. We are Zocha, we're privileged to have the mitzvah of Shmiyas Shofar, of hearing the Shofar. Because we have that warning sign where we have the option of developing that relationship. Our job is to take advantage of that option. And Be'ezras Hashem, Hashem will keep those doors open as long as we need them to be open, to have all of our tefillos answered for the good. Hashem, everyone, a ksiva v'chasima tova.